Hey everyone, Kaleos here, and welcome to the first episode of Pen and Paper Gaming. It's our special midweek episode of the BitBoys podcast, though it's just me doing it because FaZe on Chaos, or FaZe as I'll be calling him sometimes, doesn't really do our paper and pen gaming. And yeah, so I'm just going to talk to you about this. Yeah, so there's two different games that we play every week with my group. One of them is on Tuesdays and one of them is on Fridays. The Friday one, it's hard to talk about on Friday since obviously we're doing the podcast before I actually get to do any gaming. So I figured Wednesday would be a good day. It's right after my Tuesday game, and it also will provide me a little bit of time from the other game. So I'll start with the Friday one since that one's the farthest away. And each of these podcasts will be broken up into two parts, just so you know. So the first part will deal with Iron Kingdoms. To give you some background on the setting, it's a steampunk setting. First of all, it's a very war-based setting. It's up in the more of a northern region of the world that they set it in. So you've got a coastal region with some islands down south, and that's the Nation of Crix, which is very necromancy-based and pretty much evil. Then you've also got Kador, which is sort of like your equivalent of Russia. Lots of bearded folk, like my character. And then you've got Ord, which is sort of your neutral nation, which is home to tons of mercenaries and merchants and stuff like that, so it's a great place to find stuff. Then there is Menoth, which is like your holy evangelist, smite the heretics kind of thing. Our party is rather against them. Then there's also a dwindling elf nation, and there's also Rule, which is the dwarves and the Ogryn, which are sort of big, muscular guys, kind of like ogre-esque, but not quite as big or angry. Maybe not angry, but evil, as you would inherently think. And then, of course, we've also got Signar, which is your generic, like, good country. Their colors are blue, and they have a sort of bird shape for their flag. There's tons and tons of history and lore that we could go into with this, but I'm not an expert on that, so maybe one day I'll bring in Jordan, who's our expert on the lore, to talk about it. Kador, their colors are red, and the Protectorate of Menoth is white and red, I believe. This game was actually, I'm not sure if it came first or second Iron Kingdoms campaign thing. It's based off of D&D 3.0, 3.5. You can really use it with both. We use it with 3.5, personally. And this was a campaign setting created by Privateer Press, who also created the War Machine miniatures war game that's also based in the same setting. Yeah, so we've got that. Oh, and dragons are, unlike your normal D&D game, they're very rare. There's only, like, a few, and you don't want to fight them, honestly. They sound terrible. Yeah, so just to give you some background on what our group is like, there's a few of us. There's the Dungeon Master, Jordan. Then we've got my friend Kieran, who plays Bosch, the Ogryn. He's friends with my character. Then we have our friend Shu. He plays a rogue who's been nicknamed Butterman because he's got smooth-talking words, right? Yeah. Anyways, then we've got Allie, who plays a bard, and I can't remember her character's name offhand right now, though, so I'll have to find that out later. And my brother Nick, who plays another character. He hasn't had as big of a role because he switched characters a few times. In any event, that's the core group. Plus my own character, Kazmir, who is a ranger going into rifleman. So he's basically the sniper of the group. Because he's from a different country like Kador compared to everyone else, he's sort of got this whole not understanding of cultures thing going on. So he seems kind of dumb to some people, but he's not really dumb. He just speaks in broken English with a Russian accent. But if you asked him if he was talking in a Russian accent, he'd probably respond with something like, "What do you mean this is Russian accent? This is Kadoran accent." something like that. He's got lots of catchphrases too, like he calls the rogue Butterman. And once I had to make a survival check to gather food for everyone, and I rolled like a 5. So I decided that I came back with a rock. He came back and he was like, "Look, everybody, I have rock. We make delicious rock soup. All I need is whole chicken. Then we make delicious rock soup just like back in old country, like my mother make." And yeah, it's fun doing those Russian accents. Or Kadoran accents, I should say. And so me and Bosch, we both have a ton of fun doing our things. I'm rather tall. My character's like 6'8 or something like that. I'll have to check the character sheet again. Big black beard. And he's really muscular, so he's can take some stuff in close combat, but also do it in sniping, because he's got tons of guns. He's got a blunderbuss named Diplomacy. It's pretty sweet. But yeah, so, and then Bosch is an Ogryn, so he's like 8 feet tall, maybe even 9, I don't remember. He's a giant, too. But so the two of us always refer to the Little Peoples, who's anyone who's shorter than us, really. Because we've got, like, a human who... Sorry, I just remembered now that Allie is not playing a bard. That's the other game I was going to talk about. In this game, she is a gun mage. I completely forgot that. I am very sorry. My apologies, Allie. Yeah, so her character is a human for once, as opposed to her halfling in the other game. And she's rather short, and then... Shu, the rogue, is also rather short, and my brother's character was tall at first, but now I think he's average, so he fits, oh no, he's a gobber now, so he's like a little tiny goblin type thing, so he's another little people, so we have to split the little people's group into little people's and littler people's. He's interesting. Yeah, so this Friday, turned into a more comical session. It started off with us going, and we are need to head out. I think we're heading back to Ord or thereabouts. So we're going to take a train. We're in Kador, I believe it was, and I was hanging out with the locals since I was back in my home country. Figured I'd go to the pub and whatnot. And then Shu felt like he was being followed, so him being the rogue, no, he wasn't being followed. He ended up following someone. So he did that. He was following this guy into the train yards. Something happened there. My character didn't know, so I wasn't really paying attention to that part in particular. But in the end, we ended up all getting back together and heading to the train yard. And the way the guns work is they use a blasting powder. It's red and black. You need two parts, and then it creates chemical reaction. It's chemical and magical, and it combines together and creates an explosion, which it's either an explosive or you can use it in bullets and stuff like that. In any event, there was a flatbed and lots of other cars full of this stuff in the train yard, so we were there, but we noticed that there was rats. They were called skigs, and they basically gorge themselves on this powder, and sometimes if they eat both, they definitely explode, but there's also a chance that they just explode offhand. So basically we were fighting exploding rats. Yeah. So at first we're like all scared, because we're like, we don't want to shoot anything, and then we're, Bosch decides we must go and get a bag. And then so I'm like, yes, we will grab a bag and we will put them in there, and then we throw them away. And it would have been lots of fun. Yeah, so we'll see. We tried doing that. I taunted one with, one of the gun mage's magic bullets, because she has special ones. So I had to give her some gold for that afterwards, because the thing ended up eating it. So I grabbed it, and it ended up exploding in my hands. Then a bunch of the Kadorans ended up watching us as we did this, and, yeah, they ended up laughing, and there was a crowd gathering, so it became very comical with us like tossing up these exploding rats into the air and trying to attack them, and I'd shoot them and all sorts of things like that. So we ended up sort of straying from the rigid rule system and just having fun at the end of the session. And yeah, so we cleared out the rats, and we should be getting on the train next session. Okay, so the other game is the Tuesday game, which actually has a title. It's called The Bard's Tale. If you're interested in looking at some of the older stuff, since I haven't updated in a while, we do have a section on the Obsidian Portal website, which is great for D&D stuff if you ever want to run a campaign. I co-run the game with my friend Kieran. Yeah, so we take turns DMing and just trade off what we're doing exactly in the same game. Like, we both run it at the same time. It's just handy if people have questions and stuff. But Obsidian Portal, it's obsidianportal.com/campaigns/the-bards-tale. Bards, like B-A-R-D-S, no apostrophe. Anyways, so obviously you can assume that this campaign revolves around a bard. That bard would be Aria Overture, who is our friend Allie's character. The reason she's the titular bard is that she has had the character that survived the entire time. Everyone else has switched characters either through choice or through death of characters, but this little halfling bard has managed to survive the whole time. Now, just for some background, last game, they are in the Underdark. Oh, and sorry. This campaign setting is set in the 3.5 version of Forgotten Realms. So if you want to take a look at the map, I can link you to it later. If not, don't worry about it. Yeah, so it's a really cool setting. It's one of my favorite settings because I love Forgotten Realms. So they're in the Underdark at the moment, and they're chasing after this one man who had a powerful magic orb. They're not 100% sure where to go, but they'll get there eventually. They were hired by these four magical figures. There was like a dwarf and a pirate captain and stuff like that. And for background on the magic items and stuff they have, Aria pretty much holds all of them now because she survived. There's a magical key that they have. That key can be used on any portal that they use. Not portal as in door, but like a magical portal. And it'll open up a gateway to this extra-dimensional shop run by Johnny, the gatekeeper, who Kieran roleplays most of the time. He's a magical shop. He's basically the god of this little realm, it seems. Like, he pretty much controls everything. There's a door at the end of his shop with a dial beside it with a bunch of numbers, and you can dial the numbers, and it'll take you pretty much anywhere you want to go. So he's helpful. He has tons and tons of items if they need stuff, and he's interested in this orb just to take a look at it before they hand it over to this other guy, since they stumbled into his shop. So they also want to go back and talk to him. He's sort of a quasi-friendly character. Like, he's helped them, of course, but, you know, he's just got this way of talking that makes them not thinking that he's, like, a happy-go-lucky kind of guy. He's very calm, basically. He's running things. He's got a business to do. The other magic item is the library, which is also a magical orb, but we didn't want to call it the orb as well, fear for confusion. It pretty much holds a little magical library inside of it. You can go in there and store stuff. Two other party members are actually in there at the moment because they were knocked unconscious. And there's also a magical stone that they were given by the four people that they are helping to find the orb. And when they get the orb, they're supposed to call into it and say that they've got it so the people can help retrieve it. And yeah, so last game, they had fought a Balor, actually. They were only level 10. One person had power built, Jordan, and he'd ended up killing one of the Balors. So that, because of the death throes, it killed him and another party member, Shu's character. It was Artificer and a Warforged. They'd magically made their way from somewhere else. Johnny the Gatekeeper had sent them along, I believe, was the reason they were in the Forgotten Realms. And yeah, so that happened, and he killed a Balor. The other two party members were knocked out. That's why Aria put them in the bag. The library. And then she continued across the chasm. Think of it sort of like Lord of the Rings, where Gandalf fights the Balrog and except it's a Balor and an Artificer, and both of them end up dying. So Arya makes her way across the rest of the chasm in the Underdark, and so it's kind of scary if you're by yourself. Now she has two choices. To her left is a portal through which she can see more dark. It seems like she has this feeling that it's going to be more Underdark stuff. Then the other portal to the right is sort of a myriad of colors because it keeps flashing between different images of different planes of existence or areas that it could go to, we assume. Now, Arya has a magical leopard figurine. It's actually one of a set. It's one bookend. And there was another one, but that character flew off the edge of the chasm because they were crossing the bridge, and so it's gone at the moment. So she checked with her leopard friend to see if it feared one of them more, had any inclination towards one of them. She figured it was better to go through the swirly color one instead of the more Underdark, because hopefully it would be better. So as DMs, we decided we'd roll and figure out where exactly it went. We just made up our own system for figuring out which plane in the Forgotten Realms it would go to. And she ended up walking through the portal into a forest. It was a lush green forest with golden sunbeams everywhere. And it turned out she was in Arvindor. She didn't realize that right away. Which is the home plane of existence of the Elven Pantheon, the Celadrin. And she continues to walk through the forest. She's all happy because it seems nice and there's butterflies and deers running across the path and stuff. It's very peaceful. She comes across a tall sun elf standing in a clearing and he's just sort of walking away when he notices her approach. Then he turns and says, "It seems you're lost, little halfling." And then they have a brief conversation and he says, "Ah, well, I can help you continue on, find your way, since this isn't quite the right place for you. So, here, follow me to the village. It's a city size, but it feels like a small little village." So she agrees. But she realizes she doesn't have his name, so she's about to ask. But as she's about to ask, he turns his head behind him to look at her and says, "Oh, by the way, my name's Corellon." Now, those of you who don't know your Forgotten Realms deities, Corellon Larethian is the elven god. He rules over elves. I believe he also has some dealings in magic and nature. His favorite weapon is a longsword, which she thus notices at his hip. So she's like, "Oh man, oh man, I'm meeting a god." Because it's pretty sweet. So she goes along with him. And he decides that since she's got little feet and it's a long walk, they'll ride there. So he whistles and a unicorn appears, because he's a god, he can do that. So they go along, get whisked away to the city, which is, the forest sort of opens up, but at the same time it doesn't because there's no sky above you because it's a huge canopy of this one giant tree. And beyond it, there's more trees, and they're just enormous in size. They walk up through a spiral staircase and up into the canopy, where there's rope bridges hanging and sort of a naturally made hut from the tree. So it's really, really pretty, of course. So they go along. She's walking through. They go through the archery set area and a dining area, and then as they're going through the magic area, the Arcantress, I believe it was called, she hears a name pop out from the crowd when she's listening. Krynthos, which is one of the... It was actually my old character back when I was playing, and he was Krynthos, Wizard of Light. He was a sun elf wizard, obviously. So she hears that and tells Corellon, "One sec, I think I heard someone that I know." So she dashes off, asks someone if they've heard of Krynthos. They say they've had. He's still relatively new, so he's all about telling his tale. She looks over and gathered in the center of a bunch of little elf children as he's telling his tale of how he used polymorph and changed into a giant beast and was about to kill the Bone Claws in this church when he was attacked from all sides. And it seems like he's just about at the end of his tale, so just as he's finishing, Arya dashes over and exclaims, "Krynthos!" And they have a good long chat about what they've done. She's like, "You're not dead." "Well, you're dead, but you aren't." Because that's how planes of existence work. It's cool stuff. So they go and have their little chat, but she dashes back quickly just as she meets him to tell Corellon that she's going to be talking to him for a while because she don't really want to leave a god hanging, she figures. So she said that was fine. And she thinks that she's been there for quite a long time, but for some reason it's still light out. I guess that's the way time works in the Elven Forest. So they continue along, talking till it starts to get into the evening, at which point Krellin says there's a gathering, and they go and do that. Then after that, they it's the next day, they sleep, of course. Krellin leads her up. Krellin shows her to her room, then the next morning comes back. And leads her all the way, not all the way, but quite a ways up the tree, because there's a portal that's always kept to the House of Nature, which is another plane of existence. And just before she goes, Corellon gives her a gift. It's a longsword, just to remember him by, and sort of the good she's doing. So she walks through the portal and is in another forest. It's darker this time. She makes her way through, winds her way through. It starts to get really tightly packed, and then it opens up into like a dome with a large bonfire in the center. Sort of a, it seems that this fire has been going on for ever, literally. It's the whole spark of life idea. So they did that, and she realizes that the creature in front of her, because there's a circle of druids around them, they all turn with weapons drawn, except for this one, who is a Killoran, which is a green creature of nature, which is actually Shu's old character, which was a druid. And he says that, like, there was issues with him before, and now he sort of redeemed himself slightly, so he's not under control of this other super powerful druid. So they go, and now that he's done his ritual, they rest the night elsewhere in the forest, after they've discussed what's happened, of course, and then they head back out. He knows that there should be a portal back somewhere around here, so he continues, finds that, but when they step through the tree, which contains the portal, he feels something's off, and they appear back at the original town where the whole party started. And they owned a tower there, except everything's dark and gloomy. It's the shadow, plane of shadows. At which point, they're uneasy about everything. They run into an assassin who had originally tried to kill or tried to paralyze one of them. And they talk for a bit. He ends up joining their party because he's also looking for the orb. And they rush towards their old tower because there's a portal in the basement. So he goes through there, and they end up on the astral plane. The astral plane is the plane of existence that connects all of the other ones. So if you're going to travel through the planes, or if you use a teleport spell or anything, you're always going through the astral plane. On that, they're at this part where it's just a myriad of grays and purples, sort of a fog, a smoke of colors. They're not standing, they're just sort of floating, and they want to go forward, so they do. They do that, and end up moving forward when there's sort of a purple lightning storm of magic, and the key in Allie's, or Arya's pocket, heats up, and she feels the magic sort of activate, and then in front of them, sort of a tear in space as the smoke moves apart, she can see Johnny's shop. So they move forward and they enter there. He's dealing with another customer, and as the customer turns around to leave, they approach, they talk to him. he realizes that there's been a big change in the party since he last saw them. The customer he actually ends up calling back, and by calling back, I mean telepathically lifting and pulling back. And they end up having him join the party. He's a robed figure, so they can't see his limbs, and he's wearing a crystalline mask, so they can't see his face either. So they're not sure what race or gender he is yet. He, because I'm using it as the player's gender. So yeah. Elgin asked if he wanted poisons kind of thing. He wasn't needy of that. Then he magically spins the dials from a distance and opens up the portal. They've chatted for a little while in there. And once they open the portal, there's the Underdark again. They walk through, and the door closes behind them, and it's just a rock wall behind them now. It's not an actual portal. So they go forward for a little while. They get Shu, the druid, to go through. He's got this magical blindfold that lets him see everything around him with blind sense. And then they're about to head. They were going forward. He couldn't see anything. Elgin, the assassin, went forward to scout everything out. And he decided that it was... he went forward. It was safe for a while. But then he came across a drow slave outpost. So he's come back, and I believe he's just about to tell them what he's seen. We're not entirely sure. And so that's where they're left off. They know that there's a drow outpost up ahead. It's a slave outpost, so perhaps Elgin is a changeling, so he can change his shape. Will look like some other humanoid, so perhaps they'll pretend they're slave traders. Perhaps they'll attack the outpost. Perhaps they'll sneak in all his drow. Who knows? That's what we'll find out next Tuesday when we run the game. Yeah, so that's about all that's happened in the two games there. Sorry this took so long, but I have two games to talk about, and I had to sort of fill you in on background. I'll find out everyone's name for next time. I'll talk about their characters a little bit more in depth instead of just focusing on mine like I did this week. And yeah, if there's any questions that you want answered about the show today, like either of the campaigns, tips on DMing, anything like that, feel free to email us at contact.bit.boys@gmail.com and I'll take a look at. Just in the subject, put paper and pen podcast or something like that, and then I'll know that's addressed to me. And then let's see, is there anything else I should do? Oh wow, this is almost taking half an hour. Thanks for listening, of course. And I guess I'll do a question of the week for this as well. And that would be, in generic D&D or Forgotten Realms, which is your favorite race and why? Also, if you want to answer a second question, I guess, which is your least favorite race and why? And when I say favorite and least favorite, I mean to play as a character, not in general. It's if you were going to play a character, which is your favorite race and why, and which would be your least favorite race and why. If we get some responses, I'll talk about them next week, and I'll also tell you what mine is. Thanks for listening to Pen and Paper Gaming, Episode 1. This is Kaleos again, and if you're curious what's going to happen to my character in the Iron Kingdoms game or anyone else's, or if you're wondering what's going to happen to Arya and everyone in The Bard's Tale, just make sure to tune in next week when the adventure continues.